We're here. We have a quorum like we have been talking to him. Jeff Moss is online. We are here at the Capitol. Appreciate those of you in attendance this morning and those of you, looks like there's quite a few people online as well. So appreciate those. We are recording this meeting. Public comment will begin right around 1:30, 1:40. In order to speak, Diana, somewhere, she's out in the hall. She'll take the cards, and thank you to the few people that have already turned them in. But she'll take more if you would like to add your voice to the public comment. All right, we're going to start by welcoming our new board member. Paul Cutler, Representative Paul Cutler, is joining the Inland Port Board. He's been an appointee from Speaker Schultz. And we're going to go ahead and swear him in. Carol, if you'll come up and give him the oath. You do have to stand, Paul. Let's turn on your mic, too. Got to go through all the stuff. Oh, there you go. Middle.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Sorry, Carol.
That's no problem. Okay. I state your name.
I, Paul Cutler.
Do solemnly swear. That I will support, obey, and defend. The Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of Utah. And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity. Thank you very much. Welcome to the board.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Congratulations, Paul. Do you want to just take a minute, introduce yourself to everybody, and we'll get started?
Sure. I live in Centerville, and I've been in the legislature for 4 years. Before that, starting back in 2004, I served on the Centerville City Council and as mayor of Centerville, off and on, and I've served on the Utopia Board, a couple of other nonprofit boards. My technical background, I'm an electrical engineer by training, and I work in telecommunications systems and complex IT systems. I'm very interested in logistics and how to optimize logistics and other communication delivery systems. So I'm excited. I also serve on the Economic Development Committee of the legislature, and so obviously the Inland Port is a big part of our economic development strategy, so I'm interested in how we can help support economic development. And I think we especially have an opportunity to improve economic development in rural Utah in some of these areas. I think the technology that we have now is changing things, and access to transportation and logistics systems changes the games for some of these rural areas, allows them to have some of the good jobs that traditionally you'd have to be in a major metropolitan area to do.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. We're really excited for him to join. I failed to mention he's taken over for Representative Tyler Clancy, who took a position with the Homeless Services group for the governor right after the session. So we're excited to have Paul and his expertise. All right. Victoria, welcome. Glad you could join us. Paul is going to move to virtual here in a little bit. His son is graduating from BYU, so he has way more important places to be than here with us today, but he will be moving to virtual as he travels down south. All right, the first business is the approval of the minutes from March 16th. Jeff, I'm going to let you make that motion since you were in attendance, and Paula, hopefully you've read that to make our second. So
yes.
Jeff, I'll let you go ahead.
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes.
Happy to second that.
All right. And the three of us in favor, please say aye.
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 All right. Perfect. Those are approved. All right, Ben, let's go to you for the executive director report, and then Jenna as well on the Skyline Corridor update.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the board and also to the members of the public who are with us today. As always, it's great to be with the public and with our stakeholders as we're talking about the good business being done by the port. To that point, before Jenna jumps into the presentation on Skyline and giving an update on that project area, I just wanted to give a very quick, brief update on an item that has been lingering since the legislative session that we want to bring greater clarity around over the next several months. During the session, we found that there was a lot of confusion in terms of the tax differential, sometimes even what tax differential is, but also what percentages we're playing with and what percentages we're talking about when we're conducting the business of the port. To that end, we've even had some businesses coming in saying, well, if you're promising me a 30% incentive, what does that mean? Is it 30% of 100 what they pay? Is it 30% of 75? This gets incredibly wonky and technical. But we know there's an interest in getting those percentages right so that people actually understand how much is being dedicated to a specific project or to a business. So over the next several months, we are going to take some important steps, including amending probably every project area plan and budget. We'll at least bring them to the board for their consideration. But we'll probably amend almost every project area plan and budget to update these percentages and make sure that there's better clarity. For the public, as we go through that process, I just want to give you a heads up. We're probably going to be developing internal policies as well so that those who do business with the port, those who are trying to understand the port, know exactly what percentages we're talking about. Sometimes I've noticed we may throw out a number like 92%. 92% is not 92%. That sounds really confusing, but it's not. When we're talking about the port only receiving 75%, we don't have the ability to go up into some of those high percentages. We heard this from a lot of different legislators during the session. We've heard it from some of the businesses we're working with. And I just want to make the public aware of this as well, that we don't ever want to give the view or optics that we're giving away everything. We can't. We won't do that. Our deals are very fiscally sound. We feel like we only need to help fund infrastructure or provide incentives where it is absolutely necessary and no more than that. And that's always been the position of our board and staff here. So we are going to be making several moves in that realm over the next several months. And just wanted to give the board and the public a heads up on that. And Madam Chair, with that, I'll defer the rest of the report to Jenna Draper.
All right, Jenna, looks like you're online doing good work for us in the rural part of the state. So we'll turn it over to you on the Skyline Ridge.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Just as a refresher, Skyline Corridor is about 1,800 acres, and it covers Ephraim City, Manti City, Gunnison City, Salina City, Richfield City, and Wayne County. And those are spread across San Pete and Salina, and then obviously Wayne counties in central Utah. We created this project area in October of 2024, amended it in March of 25 to add in Manti City and some other areas, and then amended it again in December of 25 to add in some property in Gunnison and also a couple of parcels in Richfield. So in Ephraim City, we have triggered the parcel containing the Cobblestone Hotel. Ephraim City required this developer to put in a road behind the hotel, and they would pay for half, and then Ephraim City would pay for the other half. We've triggered this parcel with the intent of using that differential to pay for the city's half. So we did not provide any sort of incentive or money to the developer. This is strictly for Ephraim City to be able to pay for their half of the road behind the property. That opened in July. Gunnison City, we triggered this one with Proteor. They do carbon fiber manufacturing of prosthetics. They use 3D printers, as shown here, and also create their own tools and other carbon fiber pieces to make custom prosthetics. Was able to tour that, and they have a really great setup where they do the fitting and they make sure that people are comfortable and are using those prosthetics well before they send them out the door. They have ramps and stairs and all kinds of things that they're on the property there in Gunnison, where people can try these out and they can make sure that they fit perfectly before releasing them out into the wild. And Salina City, we are in the final stages of an AIB loan for them to put in some infrastructure for a housing development. Here's some renderings of those developments. The first phase will be about 106 units, both townhomes, which is down on the bottom, and then apartment buildings, which is on the right. These are market rate. These are not low-income housing. This is not going to fill any sort of niche other than your families that are first starting out, your early career professionals, the people there in Salina actually per capita make quite a bit of money compared to the rest of central Utah. So this will fill a gap between when people are just starting out and before they have enough to build their own, or excuse me, to purchase their first homes. And then in Richfield City, Industrial Injection has moved into their building. This is how it looks currently. They have moved their entire operation in there. They've hired around 100 people. A few of those moved down with the company, but most of them have been local hires. It came in at a perfect time. We lost USG, who makes wallboard and mud and all kinds of things out in Sigurd at the end of last year. That kind of dovetailed perfectly with when Industrial Injection was looking to hire people. So we were able to save those jobs. And the individuals that I know personally that were working out at the USG plant are mostly now working with either the local transportation companies or with industrial. So we were able to save those jobs. And then they plan on roughly doubling the size of their operation and going up to about 200 employees. And that's what I've got for Skyline. Any questions or comments on it?
And we've got Jonathan online as well. Jonathan, welcome. Any questions from the board?
Thank you. Good to be here.
Welcome. But to you too. I didn't say hello to you. All right, Doug from Geopartial and Financial Data Administrator for the Port. He has a presentation. It's going to talk about the mapping tools and everything else that we've got going on. I'm going to turn on the middle one there, Doug. So time is yours.
Okay, thanks, Madam Chair, members of the board. Let me share my screen with you. I'm going to dispense with a normal PowerPoint presentation. And I kind of want to show you a live demonstration of some of the things we have going on in GIS here at the port. Geospatial information for the port really revolves around, comes down to parcel information. And the parcel information is essential, I think, as we build out the port here, that the parcel information that we have for the port is accurate. Everything that we do is based on a parcel level understanding of what a project area consists of. So when I first was hired on with the port about 5 months ago, me and Ben and Ariane sat down and tried to come up with an idea of exactly what we wanted to do with this. And how we wanted to make the port work. And it became pretty obvious right away that we needed to bring our geospatial data in regard to parcels up to speed. And not only do we need an accurate idea of what's going on with parcel data at the current time, but we also need to build a parcel history of that data. So what I've been doing for the past few months is trying to build a parcel history, or what we call a parcel fabric. And this is basically parcels stacked on top of one another going back to 2017. And I can't emphasize enough the help that the UGRC has given the port on this project in providing parcel data. So basically what we have here in this project is the ability to go in, and I'm just going to try and find a parcel that works. We'll just type in hopefully this is a real parcel number. We'll find out pretty soon, won't we? And I'm taking a chance by doing a live demonstration here. So basically we can find a parcel anywhere in the port. And this one just happens to be in the Ancient Sky project area. And so we have built a parcel history that goes back to 2017 in a lot of these areas, or the year before that the port project was adopted. And so what we're trying to do is have a comprehensive list of all the parcels that are in the project area. If the project area itself is a container, the container includes all the parcels that have ever been in that project area, all the parcels that ever will be in that project area, and then the tools that are used on those parcels. And so it has been my goal to be able to go through this and not only map all the parcels that we have in the project, in the port, but also to arrange those in a way that is usable to us. So we have sort of a parcel stack going on. So if we want to go and look at parcels from any year going back to 2017 in a project area, if they happen to have had a project, we can do that. So we have, the goal is to have a comprehensive list of everything that is in the, that is in the project area. And it's been brought up beforehand. If we're going to have real economic development in some of these rural areas, it is absolutely essential that we have accurate parcel data. You can't do anything economically if you don't know where you're doing it, if you don't know what you're doing it on, you don't know what the tax increment is going to be, and you don't know what the value of that property is. So our, one of the things I'm really excited about is the ability to come in to the Port Authority and to help some of these rural areas build up their GIS system to be able to provide accurate parcel information for them so that places like San Juan County can really spur economic development.
Doug, can I ask a question here?
Sure.
Not to take your pun and twist it, but go one layer deeper for us.
Okay.
And we're talking about San Juan County.
Yeah.
And you're talking about economic development and working with the county on, you know, creating economic development down there. What tools do you provide with this parcel level data? What will we provide as the port with this parcel level data to San Juan County specifically to be able to help them? Get into the specifics.
Okay.
Use a hypothetical for
us. Not hypothetical. Me and Ben have been discussing this. We discussed it with UAC just this week. The ability for San Juan County to get into our database and to look up the parcel data that is available for their county. They don't have that ability right now, and I'm doing that work anyway.
Oh, okay.
And so just the ability to get in and to say, hey, what do we have available? They have their GIS data. Well, they don't have a GIS system per se, but their parcel records are usually in flat files in some drawer somewhere, and they don't do anybody any good if they're sitting in a drawer somewhere and they're not readily available. So we're building this out, first of all, to help the port, because we need to know what is in these project areas. We need to know the parcels. We need to know the parcel history. We need to have all the data on what we're trying to help the counties with, but also the ability for them, for San Juan County or Wayne County or San Pete County to go in and say, hey, here's a tool that the port is providing. We can go in there and look up parcel data for any year going back as far as we can get it. Right now it's 2017.
Doug, will you explain just to the public what are some components in the parcel data?
So the parcel data is going to contain every parcel has parcel ID number. Every parcel has taxing data, potentially ownership data. Every parcel has the size of the parcel, and a lot of the data that we get from the state also has current taxes, current valuation, and also if it's been built on or not. You know, so if it's been built on, the type of structure that it has, the number of floors that it has, and so all the valuation associated with that. And so they will be able to go in and find out any of this data. Now, some of it doesn't exist right now, and so we're going to have to help provide that data for them, and hopefully in association with the Utah Association of Counties. But
Doug, do you mind if I jump in on that one too?
Yeah, sure.
I feel like I'm really loud. Sorry.
Turning down.
Here we go. So one of the things, and compliments to Doug on this, but as we were going through the legislative session, one of the things we heard was we don't know where project areas are, and we don't know what they do. We don't know any of the context that's happening underneath there. So as Doug started to develop these different layers out, we realized that it was going to help solve that issue. Speaking of the RDA situation, this data has been missing from any public record always. We've never had it before. So the transparency piece was big, but as we delved into this, we realized that there were a lot of rural counties that just did not have this information. So not only are we going to be the gold standard in terms of entities that do tax increment, we will also be providing a significant public service to help these local communities get their parcels and records in a way that hopefully will help them better assess and identify revenue sources, but also make their information more readily available to those who want to work in the counties as well. So I think those of us who live in urban counties just take for granted that we can go onto a website and see our tax information. That does not exist all over the state of Utah. And so we're finding now an opportunity for significant public service to help some of these counties. We've talked about a partnership with Utah's Association of Counties as well, to help provide some of this data even outside of our parcel information. And I know this, for those on the Wasatch Front, again, this is not a big thing, but for those in rural Utah, this is huge. Helping to get this data right is really important.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. Yes.
Can I follow up on this? This sounds great. It'd be super useful to have that tax increment information also there. Do you have the ability to add other useful information to that parcel? Say, what's the electrical service there? Does it have water, sewer, gas? Is there fiber? Is there other useful utilities that you
set? Yeah, the infrastructure portion of this is interesting, because a lot of that we're going to have to go to the cities. I failed to tell you what my background was. I was the GIS administrator for Layton City for 31 years before I came to the port. So I have a lot of experience working with municipal GIS and municipal needs. And a lot of that data isn't readily available. We would have to go to the cities to get that. And so a lot of the infrastructure stuff is going to be a challenge to get. We would like to get it. And mm-hmm. It's just a matter of how protected is that, especially water systems. Cities don't want water systems getting out. And storm drain and storm sewer is a little bit easier to get. But and telecommunications is sometimes tricky. So there are a lot of challenges that we still have ahead of us. But yeah, we do have some other areas that we've been working at. Ben brought up just some project area stuff. This is just a little thing that I built just to help members of the port out if they just need some quick information. So you can go to this website that I built. It has the parcel map, the ability to search for a parcel, the ability to search for a project area. And then you can go to these little cards that I built that are updated and dynamically updated from the GIS that is just going to give you a little bit of information about where the project is, what amendment we're on, how many acres it has. I want to add how many parcels are potentially in there. So just a kind of a quick primer on what is the status of this project area. An environmental section, I'm a little leery of this one because these environmental maps are big, but this is so we can go in and check ports against wetlands, any issues we might have with slope or anything like that might affect the project area, basically identifying sensitive lands inside the project areas and so that we can mitigate for that. And then also I've added a logistics section, so that if you want to know if you have a parcel, I'm just going to do this really fast. Hopefully this works. Just say, I want to know what's within 5 miles of, we'll just do 19 miles from this spot. And it'll come back and it'll tell you if there's a project area there, the primary roads, the secondary roads, any rail, any airports that we might have within that area. So you can get a pretty good idea of how economically viable a piece of land is or piece of property is for any use that you might have. And so as we build this out, there's going to be new ideas that come up all the time. We also have the ability to go in here and look at the taxing entities that are going to be affected by the development of a project area and how that might affect taxes. And this is, we're just getting started on this. These are just some of the tools that we have right now. And hopefully we're going to build this out. We haven't really started to touch the triggers. I've started to map where the triggers are. So we have the ability with some of the newer ones to go in and find out whether a parcel has been triggered, the date it was triggered, the length of that trigger, the resolution is there. You can bring that up. So we can search on triggers. We'll know what has been triggered, what hasn't been triggered. And as I said, there are a lot of challenges ahead of us, and I'm really excited about it. I really like a challenge. And this is a really big challenge because it is, first of all, it is vitally important to the economic development of these areas that we have this information, whether they're in a port or not, you know, whether in a port project or not is vital. I think is really important, and, that we do this for them and help out any way we can. And, also, it helps the port out a lot in meeting its goals and trying to allure businesses to these areas. So.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You for your time. We'll look forward to hearing more from you in future board meetings. Any other questions from anybody online or in person? Okay. Amy, it looks like it's you. You have 5 or 6 board policies that we need to update. And what number are you on there, my dear? All right.
Thank you. I will be reviewing some of the policies that are up for the annual review. Some of these we've made changes on, and some of them we've reviewed with no recommended changes. We'll first start off with our BP 10, records retention, our policy around records management and public access to UIP records. As we have reviewed this, given the legislative changes from the last session, Caitlin Felstead, who is our MARCOM director, as well as our records officer, we sat down and reviewed this, and we do not have any recommended changes to this policy at this time. So we will satisfy this annual review for this specific policy. The next policy that is up for its annual review is our personnel policy. It covers all of the responsibilities and obligations of UIPA employees and staff members. We're currently going through a thorough review of HR-related policies and procedures and other endeavors around that. So at this time, we don't have suggested changes, but we do anticipate, this is the first time it's up for its annual review, we do anticipate that we will have some suggested changes from this HR review of policies for our May board meeting. Our next policy that we will be seeking board approval for a minor edit to it is the segregation of duties, which is BP 12. This is about our processes and transactions that we do to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse, and how we segregate some of those responsibilities around purchasing and money handling. We have one small change around roles and responsibilities as we changed one of the roles from a financial manager to a financial director. Our next policy is our board governance policy. This is BP 14. This outlines the roles and responsibilities for board standards and operations for our board members, both voting and non-voting. Larry Shepard oversees this policy, is the policy owner, and has reviewed this, and we do not have any suggested changes at this time. On our next list, we've got our BP 15 Code of Conduct. This really is an overarching policy around our organization, expectations overall, how we do deal with best practices, behaviors, and conflicts of interest overall with UIPA staff members as well as board members. As we have reviewed it, we may have, again, some suggested changes for next month, but at this point in time, no edits for this meeting. Lastly, we have our BP 16, which is our public infrastructure districts. This is over our compliance with this PID Act for the creation and oversight of any UIPA-sponsored PIDs. We do anticipate some additional changes as we've been reviewing various bills from the last legislative session. We don't have any changes at this time, but fully anticipate in May that when we seek board approval, we'll have a few additions to make sure that it is comports with some of these bills. At this time, that covers all of the policy updates that we have. I will pause here for any questions from the board.
I don't see anyone on in person. How about online? Any questions on these policies? Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll be back for voting later on some of these. All right, Mr. Smith, Stephen, let's give us a update on the Northwest Quadrant.
Absolutely. All right. Give me just one moment.
The Aridge. That's what I like to call it.
The what?
The Aridge.
The Aridge.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. Okay. Well, Madam Chair, members of the board, I'm glad to be with you here today to look at the First Amendment to our project area plan and budget for the Northwest Quadrant. We originally approved this in May of 2023, so it's time for a little bit of an update here, which I'm happy to walk you through today. Just to give you a little bit of background on it, we are not changing any boundaries here. This is really to modernize this plan and really catch us up with all of the work that we've done here. So this amendment really represents a pivotal shift from high-level visioning that we were looking at the time to really an actionable operational framework. It recognizes the role of some of our strategic partners with the Salt Lake City International Airport, the major railroad providers, our infrastructure projects like the Crossroads Port and the intermodal facilities that have come online out there. And then also updates our recruitment standards to align with our legislative mandates. So things around water usage and air quality. And then importantly, it really reflects the commitment to the community by formalizing the transition to catch up with the mitigation actions that we've recommended through the preferred scenarios. So we're looking for that really kind of all-inclusive in this. I will note that it doesn't necessarily look at the specifics around the incentives, the percentages that Ben referenced earlier, but we do look at some modifications to the incentives here as well to make those a little bit more flexible. Again, also to recognize that or to reflect the policy recommendations that we brought forward in that preferred scenario study. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Anything from anyone? Maybe I'll just note on today, right? Today was the newspaper article, specifically because of the work that we've done on the Northwest Quadrant. A new police station just went in Salt Lake City out there, and not station, I guess it's a precinct, but was helped funded by our increment here, and it's really largely because of the Northwest Quadrant work. So we have a lot more police present out there too. So we're really proud of that work. So thanks for everything.
Hopefully more appreciate to come. It. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for your time.
All right, Jenna, let's go back to you on the Castle County, excuse me.
You got it. Okay. Members of the board, we are presenting the Second Amendment to Castle Country today. Proposed amended boundaries are all within Carbon County. So last time we amended things, we added acreage down in Green River, which is in Emory County. This amendment will be specific to Carbon County. It will take Castle Country to a total of just over 15,000 acres spread across the two counties and a couple of cities within those counties. This proposed area up in the top left, the Castle Gate Zone, is where Tier Energy is going to be doing some power projects and expanding their footprint there in Carbon County. The Wildcat Canyon Zone is a rail loadout. And just for everybody's FYI, the work being done with Genesee, Wyoming, and the Wildcat area has spurred additional development for Savage. They are now moving forward with their Price Terminal as well. So we're actually going to get two rail projects out of this one. And then in the bottom left, the Castle Valley, we're adding some acreage that the county purchased and they want to put into the project area so that they can work with us and offer some incentives and some infrastructure tools for anybody that chooses to purchase that land from them. Carbon County wants to partner with us to enable the necessary infrastructure to move all of these projects forward. These proposed areas will allow Carbon County's economy to further diversify from the boom and bust of the coal industry and also open up other industries that are interested in locating in that area and utilizing the rail infrastructure that already exists, as well as the rail infrastructure that's going to be developed with this partnership. The Tax Differential Committee favorably recommends for approval to the Utah Inland Port Authority Board the proposed amendment to the Castle Country Plan and Budget. And the Tax Differential Committee met last week and went over this plan and recommended that we move it forward. Any questions on this amendment?
I don't see any, Jenna.
Okay.
No hands are going up. Thank you for this. This is great. I love the amount of times you talked about rail in adjacent to. That's exactly what we're looking for, especially off the Wasatch Front. So
we're very excited. Wildcat is actually going to start with about 15 to 20 acres at each phase. They anticipate that 20 to 30 acres each year will be opened up to additional rail access within their land.
Great. Thank you. All right. Just as planned, 1:40, let's move on to general public comment. We'll have you come up. We'll just have all three of you come up and sit down, Joan, Katie, and Dina. And then we'll turn each little bit of time for each one of you. Joan, why don't we start with you? You'll be in the middle. All right.
Can you hear me? Okay. Ben, I'm here today to say thank you for your recent statements in a Salt Lake Tribune interview where you said that UWEPA's legal mandate does not include an ICE detention center, that there's no gray area here. The Inland Port will not be using any of its resources to support this facility. You added that water, sewer, and road capacity for additional traffic are all already in limited supply in the city's northwest quadrant, and ultimately how we use those is going to be incredibly important. You said that you are hearing from northwest quadrant businesses wanting details on this ICE facility's potential impact on port resources, and you said that we, meaning the Utah Inland Port Authority, no, we would not use inland port funding to help support this operation in any way, shape, or form. And so I call on the UWEPA board to use this opportunity of amending the Northwest Quadrant Project Area Plan to amend it to make this clear and strong statement that UWEPA does not support an ICE detention center in the Northwest Quadrant. Perhaps you could even say that the impact of this ICE facility on Northwest Quadrant water, sewer, road capacity, and businesses would be a serious violation of UWEPA's legal mandate. Here are some related actions that UWEPA could take. Prepare a press conference, call a press conference, make it perfectly clear in the amended plan that UWEPA does not support the proposed ICE detention center at 6020 West, 300 South, which lies within the Northwest Quadrant project area, and that the UWEPA does not consider a 10,000-person federal detention facility consistent with the project area's plans, stated goals of low water use, ecological sensitivity, or in alignment with Salt Lake City planning objectives, or compatible with UWEPA's legal mandate. Commit to formally supporting Salt Lake City's zoning water and sewage strategies to prevent this ICE facility from operating in the UWEPA Northwest Quadrant project area. And communicate as UWEPA with DHS, ICE, and with our federal senators and representatives the same information. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go on to Katie.
Hi, thank you for taking comments today. Yesterday we celebrated Earth Day. Today, this board is scheduled to vote on a project area amendment that has the potential to vastly increase the carbon footprint of development under the Utah Inland Port Authority. New additions in the amended Castle Country project area would open up transportation and transloading options for oil and waxy crude moving between the Uinta Basin and rail lines in Price and Wellington. This increased access to local and national markets will lead to increased production. The Fossil Rock Coal Mine is now operating in one of the Emery County project areas, helping supply the Hunter and Huntington coal-fired power plants. Gate Canyon, above 9 Mile Canyon, is considered an acceptable route for truck traffic between Mitton and Wellington, even though 9 Mile Canyon is renowned as the world's longest art gallery. Increased dust-raising, ground-shaking truck traffic would permanently damage the rock art and structures. Other UEPA project areas are considering or including gas-fired power plants to fuel large data centers. All of this accelerates climate change and impacts our air and water, the natural environment, and human health. Utah needs an economy based on clean, sustainable, and safe energy, and not nuclear. And UEPA needs to be a part of that. Thank you.
Thanks. Dita, time is yours.
Can you? Okay. So Dita Seed, I'm with the Center for Biological Diversity, and I'm a member of the Stop the Polluting Ports Coalition. I'm here to address the ongoing public harm caused by two UEPA creations, the Tooele Valley Public Infrastructure District and the Interstate Technology Park Public Infrastructure District, both of which are financing industrial development in UEPA's Tooele Valley project area in direct conflict with Great Salt Lake, the public trust, and basic accountability standards. Together, these two districts have authorized $160 million in tax-exempt bonds for a single developer's 500-megawatt data center and gas power plant campus situated in and immediately adjacent to thousands of acres of Great Salt Lake wetlands. This board created both PIDs. This board is responsible for what they enable. The harms are specific and unaddressed. On water, the Tooele Valley PID is financing the infrastructure for industrial development, including a reverse osmosis water treatment plant. In 2006, the Utah Geological Survey identified a remaining annual buffer of only 5,600 acre feet before groundwater withdrawals in northern Tooele Valley caused irreversible wetland damage. 20 years later, and this situation is even more dire, we don't know how much this facility will consume because no water analysis has been required or publicly filed. Based on industry benchmarks for facilities of this scale, our independent estimate is that 7 to 45% of the entire remaining buffer will be drawn down from a single development. The board should find that range alarming, and the board should also find it alarming that we are the ones who had to calculate it. On wastewater, the Tooele Valley PID's reverse osmosis plant is now the subject of a draft wastewater discharge permit before the Division of Water Quality. To discharge this permit through habitat critical to Wilson's phalarope, for which there is a positive ESA listing finding that has already been issued. Okay. I will submit the rest of this online, but you should be forewarned that this is a disaster unfolding, and it is caused by these public subsidies, and the developer has been pretty explicit about that. He couldn't do it without you.
Thanks, Dita. All right, we're going to go to one additional one online. David, you could unmute yourself. You've got 2 minutes, sir.
Thank you. I'm speaking, adding on to what Joan Gregory had to say, David Bennett from Park City. As somebody who spent a career planning correctional facilities, this proposed ICE detention facility within the Northwest Quadrant is just a disaster waiting to happen. Salt Lake City has raised objections about sewage and water. Its adjacency to the Great Salt Lake is of critical concern. And the number of inmates that they want to hold in this facility, the building that they're talking about remodeling has, by very simple standards, maybe a quarter, perhaps a third of the space that is necessary to house that number of inmates, not to mention the overall footprint of the lot just doesn't support this type of correctional facility. The conditions of confinement in such a facility are going to be very suspect, and because it is within the Inland Port project area, I agree with Joan that, thank you, Ben, for your strong and unequivocal comments about the proposed ICE facility, but I agree with Joan that we need to go a step further, because whatever is planned here, if we're just waiting for a disaster to occur, this ICE facility is a mistake that should not be built. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. All right, let's move on to board action. Jenna or Amy, we're going to go back to you at, right? We're going to go, who's reading? Ben, you're reading? Okay, very good. We're going to go through BP-12, segregation of duties.
I think we've got two board policies for the board's consideration, BP-10 and BP-12. Oh. So we'll is it just 12?
Yeah, I only have 12 on my list.
Okay, we will just do 12.
I have an updated list. You didn't get the updated list.
I did not get the updated list. We'll just do 12, Madam Chair. I apologize. So the motion is to approve BP-12, segregation of duties, as presented by Amy Brown-Coffin.
All right, gentlemen online, if I can get someone to make a motion, please.
I will make that motion.
Thank you, Jeff. And a second.
I'll second.
Thanks, Jonathan. All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 That is unanimous. All right, we're going on to the amendment number one in the Northwest Quadrant Project Area and Budget. Ben?
Absolutely. Madam Chair, this one has one slight nuance. As you mentioned, this is the original, so we actually, by statute, do not adopt this or amend this via resolution. It's just a board motion. So the motion would be amendment number one to the Northwest Quadrant Project Area Plan and Budget, as presented by Stephen Smith.
Thank you. Jeff, can I get a motion from you?
I will make that motion.
Thank you. And a second?
A second.
Thanks, Jonathan. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Unanimous. Paul is on as well.
Aye.
Let's go to the Castle County Amendment number two, Ben.
Absolutely. So, Madam Chair, the motion is to approve Resolution 2026-19, a resolution of the Utah Inland Port Authority Board adopting amendments to the Castle Country Inland Port Project Area Plan.
Thanks, Ben, for reading that resolution on the record. Will someone make a motion to adopt that resolution?
So moved.
Thanks, Jonathan. And a second?
Second.
Thanks, Jeff. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
That was unanimous. All right. Thank you. We will conclude this session. Thank you for everyone that attended. We will now entertain a motion to move into closed session to be held here at the State Capitol at 1:51 p.m. And we'll do that via electronic meeting for the purpose of strategy session to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property. As followed is described in 52-4-204 and 205 in the Utah section of code under the Open Public Meetings Act. Can I get a motion for that closed session?
I'll make that motion.
And a second?
I'll second.
Thanks, Jonathan. And Larry, this calls for a roll call vote, so.
I would be happy to. Jeff Moss.
Aye.
Jonathan Friedman.
Aye.
Paul Cutler.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Yes. All righty. The board will remain here in closed session and we'll ask everyone else to leave. Thank you very much. Board members, you can stay on the Zoom and then we'll go from there.
Yes. That was good.